from the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
And it is Thursday night. If you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So, Karen, better late than never.
That's right. Well, I'm busy texting now, so you're just going to have to go on without me until I'm done. No, okay. I'm kidding.
See, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't matter.
See what he has to put up with?
No, it's totally cool. I get it, you know. Text away. So anyways, tonight we have a really good show lined up for everybody. First, we are going to have Cindy Pons Newell. She is the author of Don't Say Her Name, which is kind of like a fictionalized rendering of what her and her husband experienced when they lived in a haunted farm for the first 6 years of their marriage.
But it's not instructions. We can actually say her name, right?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Yeah. No, the name of the book is Don't Say Her Name, which is kind of an interesting title for a book. So we're going to find out what that all means and, you know, what kind of stuff that they had going on in their farmhouse. And then, meanwhile, Dave Galvin from the Paranormal League of America. Anybody over 30 is going to get that joke. Otherwise, you know, Google it.
That's right.
Dave Galvin of the Paranormal League of America. He is going to be joining us at the second half, and we're going to be talking about UTX Vision, which is his online television station, as well as some really provocative investigations that he's been up to lately. So always fun to have Dave Galvin on the show.
That's right. So before we go much further, I have a Dybbuk box update because I talked to our friend Jason Haxton the other day, just quick exchange of email, and I asked him how his yard was. Because last we heard, Jason had buried the Dybbuk box in his backyard, and that had opened up a sinkhole. So in his email to me, he said it's still a sinkhole and he's going to be bringing in something like well engineers or something to fix the problem.
Wow.
So yeah, the Dybbuk box continues to deliver.
Yeah, it really does. And it's like J.D. Harrison said when he was on the show with us that this goes way beyond chance. Or coincidence. I mean, this is real, you know.
It is. And I have to admit, you know, as much as I joke about, oh, I'm not afraid of the Dybbuk box, I'm not afraid of it, but I don't want it anywhere near my house.
If it can cause major geological problems in the earth, then yeah. I'm thinking that, yeah, I'd be afraid of having that in my house, too.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's my Dybbuk box update.
Okay.
All right. So
yeah. Yeah, and you know, before we go to the guests, you know, we always talk about everything. This weekend, this Saturday morning, my partner in crime, Amy Hessian-Egan, and I, we are going to be at Robinson Woods on the north side of Chicago in Norridge, Illinois. We are going to be doing a little filming out there, so we're going to put it, hopefully Cheryl's going to put it on the homepage, the videos that we put on there. Also, now Amy and I are officially the Chicagoland representatives of the Great American Phenomenon Hunt. So you'll also be able to find it at tgafftv@youtube.com.
Oh, very
yes.
Good.
Yep.
You are moving up in the world, and soon you will be as famous as I.
We talked about it before. I have absolutely no aspirations of being famous whatsoever.
Neither do I. And yet, here we are.
And here we are.
Yeah, so we participated this past weekend in a kids ghost camp at the Walker Ames House in Port Gamble with my group, South Sound Paranormal Research, a great group from Kitsap County, Washington, organized at Black Wolf Paranormal. We've had one of their members on, Michael White, God, just blanked out on his name. Anyway, Michael White's been on before, on the show before, and we had a really good time. It's really fun to work with kids and to see, and some of those kids will just absolutely amaze you with what they know and what they pick up on those investigations and what they listen to. So we had a really good time, and I wanted to thank Black Wolf Paranormal for inviting us to participate in it. And it's a tradition. This is the second year. We did it last year here in Lewis County at the museum. And then this year they did it. So hopefully it'll be something that continues in Washington. Because you know what? Kids are going to investigate anyway. We might as well teach them the right way to do it.
Exactly. And you know what? It's like it's on the Facebook page when I, you know, commented. And I really do mean this. If I lived out that way, I could not think of a better group of people to leave Theo with to learn about this kind of thing. You know, you and William and, you know, Black Wolf Paranormal, you guys get it. You know it. And, you know, I would like him to have that kind of open-mindedness. So, you know, I definitely wouldn't mind him learning from you guys.
Well, that's right. When he's old enough, he will tell you and you can come on out here. You know, one of these days you have to get out here anyway.
I know. We're going to try and get out there this year, but unfortunately, you know, money was an issue. So
life happens, doesn't it?
That's right. Mm-hmm. It does.
I totally hear what you're saying. Totes, yep. Man.
Totes my goats. So I think we're probably going to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, our first guest is going to be Cindy Pons Newell, the author of Don't Say Her Name. And, you know, we'll be right back. Stick around. It's going to be live.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com. A proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American News and Politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
And we are back at Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. And we had a little bit, some little technical difficulties there, but we were able to pull it together. So now joining us for the first portion of our show is Cindy Pons Newell. She is the author of Don't Say Her Name. And Cindy, welcome to the Underground.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, okay, now with your novel, Don't Say Her Name, this is actually sort of based on something real that occurred. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, you are. That's right.
Yeah.
When my husband and I first got married, we rented a small farmhouse, and we lived there for 6 years, and during that time, we had a lot of strange things that happened, mm-hmm. and I always thought it would be cool to write a story about it, so after all these years, it finally happened.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk about the actual events in this
okay.
farmhouse. So where was it?
This house is it's in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first thing that I can remember happening was before we actually got married, my husband moved in, and I had been there cleaning and getting it ready to move in. I'd been there all day working, and I left to go to buy some more stuff. And coming home, I noticed that there was a light on inside. And I thought, well, maybe my husband had come home from work early. So I stopped to see if everything was okay, but he wasn't home. And so then, of course, I thought, well, I just left the light on by accident. When I walk in the back door, I hear water running, and I realize there's water running in our bathroom.
Okay.
And so the bathroom sink was turned wide open, and the bathroom light was on. So I turned the light out, and then I was standing there in complete darkness, and I thought, oh, gosh, you know, somebody was in my house. You know, I walked in on somebody that was trying to rob us. You know, I,
and then washing their hands, yes.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm trying to debunk anything paranormal.
Right.
But after so many things, you start to realize, you know, this is real. This is really happening, and you know, for so long, I thought I was just losing my mind, and I became so paranoid, and so I felt like I was being watched every day. But, you know, every time I would walk in the back door, it was like a fog that I walked into, and it was overwhelming. But the day we moved out, that feeling went away, and it has never bothered me again. So I have to think that there was really something in that house.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, did you ever do any kind of historical, you know, research on the house to see if, you know, who it was that could possibly be, you know, haunting you?
Well, just because we live in a very small town,
mm-hmm.
we knew the people who owned it. They were very good, decent, you know, very nice people. But they had actually had a relative who passed away in the house. And from what I have always heard, there was also a small baby that died in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I don't know. It was just, but, you know, I've always thought, yeah, houses can be haunted, but people can also be haunted. And
yes.
So maybe whatever spirit was there had followed us there from somewhere. I don't know. It was just, it's too weird to not be paranormal.
Right.
I understand. Yeah, no, I totally understand. I lived in a place that was a little weird when I was younger, too, so I get it.
Yeah. I think the most terrifying experience I had was a little cat took up at our house, and being newlyweds and working second shift, my husband, he and I both worked second shift, but I got home a little bit earlier than him each night. And mm-hmm. so this little cat came in, and you know, it really helped me not be quite as scared. But one night, just out of the blue, I was watching TV, and mm-hmm. this little cat started growling, and I call it a Halloween cat. He got all fluffy. he crouched down real low to the ground, and his eyes were going back and forth across the room. And at that exact moment, the room became very, very cold. Mm-hmm. And I could feel it. I knew something had walked into the room. I couldn't see it, but whatever I felt, that cat could see. And I was just, you know, I mean, I was beyond terrified. I sat there for 2 hours without moving until my husband finally got home from work.
You just sat there. You didn't go running from the house. So.
No, I didn't. I was
but
too
that's
scared to get up.
That shows a certain level of bravery. Now, you know, you were, now, would you say that you were the person who was experiencing these, this activity, or did your husband also get a healthy dose of it as well?
He never really had anything major that happened to him, except one night we were already in bed. We were almost asleep. We heard, it sounded like a picture slide down the wall. And when it hit the ground, it shattered. I mean, we could hear glass very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
It shattered. And so he and I both got up. I stopped by our little hall closet and got the broom and the dustpan and went straight to the living room where the sound came from. But when we flipped on the light, there was no broken glass anywhere. We could never find anything in the whole house. I mean, we were so convinced that we heard glass shatter. We even took flashlights and went outside thinking that maybe it was a car window or something, but we could never find anything. And that was really about the only time he ever experienced anything.
Wow. So as you were telling him about the things that you were experiencing before the glass thing, did he believe you or did he think you might be losing it?
I think he believed me because my mother-in-law had some experiences there as well. And I remember one time in particular, she came to visit, and this was a very small house. Yeah, I mean, it was a two-bedroom, one-bath, you know, very tiny house. And she went to the bathroom, and she was gone for a long time, and she finally came back into the living room, and she asked us, "Why didn't you come help me?" She said she tried to open the bathroom door, and the doorknob wouldn't turn, and she said she was banging on the door, and she was screaming for help. And we couldn't hear a thing. We heard nothing. And then she said all of a sudden the doorknob turned and the door opened and she went running out. And so I think that, you know, between she and I both, he couldn't help but believe.
Sure.
See, now there you have it, though. I mean, the ghost in the house was, you know, he had kind of a sense of humor on him. Or her.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Because, yeah, that was my mother-in-law.
There you go. So now before you moved to this house, had you had paranormal experiences before? Did you have any belief or lack of belief, or was it something that had never even really crossed your mind?
Well, growing up in a Baptist home, you know, we were taught that when you die, you either go to heaven or you go to hell. There's no in between. There's no coming back. And that was just something I'd always believed. But looking back, and especially since the book was published, I realized I've had a lot of paranormal experiences, and I just didn't know what to call it. And I can remember as a very, very young child feeling like someone was watching me, just having that, you know, just out of nowhere, you know, the air around me would get really cold, and I could just feel something. I've never seen a ghost. That's the only thing. I've never been able to see anything, but I have felt it so strongly that I just, you know, I know that it was there.
Right. See, and what's funny is about with ghost stories and all that, although I grew up in the Chicagoland area, but my family is originally from Alabama. And I know with Southerners that it's like a Southern people, they love their ghost stories, but they kind of keep it in the back a little bit because, well, you know, the Bible says no. So it's, you being from the South, I mean, would you say that that's kind of like, that's how it is?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everybody loves their ghost stories, but then at the same time, they think, oh, that didn't really happen, or, you know, it was something else. You know, everybody tries to figure out a scientific reason for why things happen, and sometimes it just, you know, when you've had that moment, that paranormal experience that just really defines, you know, you just know, and so it doesn't really matter what other people think or believe. And before I published the book, I kind of kept things quiet to myself. I never really talked about it a lot. But since the book has been published, I've had so many people tell me their own stories.
Oh, yeah, so they get kind of that furtive look on your their face, and they take you this aside, and they say, I've got something to tell you.
It has been so funny. At every book signing I've had so far, everybody has to tell me their own personal ghost story. Yeah. And before this, you know, that was just something that you never really talked about it, you know, except at Halloween. And then it was just, you know, this didn't really happen, but I'm going to tell you about it.
See, I usually get first, you know, man, you're pretty friggin' weird. And then they take me to the side and they're like, okay, you know, maybe you can come and investigate my house and let me tell you what's going on. And I get a lot of investigations I have gotten a lot of investigations in that way.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy how, you know, you think, for so long you think it's only happening to me or there's something wrong with me, and then all of a sudden people start coming out of everywhere, you know, let me tell you about what happened to me. And then you realize all these years I thought I was crazy, and now I know I'm not.
Yeah, but doesn't that help? Coming out of the closet with the paranormal stuff, actually, I found made a huge difference because I thought I was nuts.
Yeah. And I think that it has really helped other people to understand that, you know, if it happened to me, then who's to say it's not happening to you? You know, you're not crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, just embrace it for what it is and just, you know, try to make the best of it. And I think one thing that has helped me the most over the years is that, you know, nothing has ever hurt me. It's not anything physical that can hurt you. So just take it for what it is and try to enhance what ability you've been given.
Yeah. Well, it's like people, you know, that is the first thing that I always hear from people. It's like, oh my God, I think I'm crazy. I work in the psychiatric field, and let me tell you something, crazy people, they think they're completely sane.
Exactly.
So, you know, crazy people don't know that they're crazy. Yeah. So
no,
it's like
you think everyone else is crazy.
You may be mistaken, but you're not crazy.
Oh, I'm not crazy. They're the ones you have to look out for.
Yep, pretty much. So, the novel, Don't Say Her Name, tell me about the title.
Well, the story itself begins in the 1800s, and it works all the way up to the present. There's one particular spirit in the house that gains power from people calling on her name. Mm-hmm. And through time, you see that different people try different things. There's one family that actually have a seance in the house. That doesn't do anything but give her more and more strength. And she's evil. She's not a good ghost. And so calling her name just makes it even worse.
She's like Bloody Mary.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I came up with that title. I had actually had several different titles in mind. And then when I started looking, just basic research on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and, you know, typing in different titles, I'm like, you know, that name's already there. I'm not going to use someone else's book title. And so it was actually my children that helped me come up with that name.
Well, it's a good title. I like it.
Well, thank you. The little girl, I don't know if you've seen the cover, but the little girl on the cover is actually my daughter.
Oh, okay.
And the house on the cover is local to where we live. So the lady who owns that house is a good friend of mine, and you know, we were trying to decide on what house we could use. I really wanted to have, you know, a big old home on the cover, and I had no idea that she would allow me to do that. But when I finally got up the nerve to ask her, she was like, "Yeah, that would be so cool." And so that has really been, you know, I think that, especially because the house itself is claimed to be haunted, and, you know, she says it is, I believe her. And so that has sparked a lot of interest as well.
Okay. Very cool. So is the book scary?
Well, everyone seems to think so. I actually had someone call me tonight and tell me I just finished reading it, and Kyle had to sleep with my light on tonight. writing it, my oldest daughter would come by the computer, and I'd say, "Hey, Hannah, listen to this. Tell me what you think." And she would give me her honest opinion, and either she would say, "Ooh, that's creepy," or "That doesn't sound right." So she was my best cheerleader, and she helped me come up with some really spooky ideas.
So your intention was then for it to be a scary book.
Yeah. Well, to start with, I just wanted to tell my story.
Sure.
But there really, you know, in the 6 years that we lived in this rented house, there wasn't that much to make an entire novel. Mm-hmm. And it just came to me one day, you know, I love history. That was my college major. Why not work that love for history into the novel? And so instead of following one certain person or, you know, one family, it follows the house itself. So yeah. As you're reading the book, you find, you meet many, many characters. But yeah. You don't have to keep up with, you know, all the different names, because when one family moves out, a new family moves in, and then the story just continues. So you don't have to worry about being overwhelmed with so many names to remember.
Well, I love a good ghost story. And I have to tell you, I'm going to have to read this, because I have not seen a movie or read a book that has scared me in years. And it's a lot of it is because of what I do as a paranormal investigator, I'm sure.
It's sensitized.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I still love a really good, scary story. Like, when I was a kid, I was captivated by the Amityville Horror, and I know that that's been since, you know, debunked, essentially disproven. But mm-hmm. when I was a kid reading that, I mean, it scared the crap out of me, and I like that kind of scared.
Yeah, that's how I am. And I love to watch things that aren't really horror movies, but ghost stories.
Yeah.
You know, any kind of documentary about ghost stories or, you know, mm-hmm. haunted house or haunted location, that's the kind of stuff I like, because I know firsthand that it can happen. And, you know, so that, to me, that just plays even more into the effect of, you know, that's just scary.
Well, so have you ever considered taking the next step, or have you already, and becoming a paranormal investigator?
I've actually had some people ask me about coming in and, you know, trying to communicate with what they have in their home. It's a possibility. I mean, I'm not going to say definitely no. You know, I may try it, but I've actually had one lady in our neighborhood to call me, and I actually met her at her home, and I could feel a certain spirit. And you know, like I've said, I couldn't see her, and I couldn't hear her, but I could feel the presence, and I just knew that it was an elderly lady living in that house. And, you know, and I told her, I think that mostly she just wants you to recognize that this is her home. You know, she was here first, and she's okay with you being here, but just remember that it was her home first, and just, you know, try to respect that. And so, who knows where this will take me.
Okay, you know, it's funny that you how you are wording everything, it almost sounds like to me like you are suggesting that you have some kind of psychic ability.
I've considered that, and I can't yeah. say definitely that I do, but because of the feelings that I get, and mm-hmm. it's almost like I don't know how to even put it into words. It's like they're trying to communicate through me. And
yes.
maybe it's because I haven't fine-tuned that ability that I can't quite hear
yes.
what they're saying, or I can't see them, but it's strong enough that I know they're there.
Well, yeah. but see, that's the start. We tell people that you are your own best tool for hunting ghosts, for investigating the paranormal. Yeah. And, you know, people use all of this equipment. They use EMF meters and recorders and thermal cameras and all this really expensive stuff. And truly, you are your own best equipment. And I understand, I call what you're describing my spidey sense. And boy, when that goes off, I know that there's something there. And then I don't necessarily, sometimes I see them, sometimes I hear them, but normally I just kind of know, like you're describing, I know in my head. Mm-hmm. You
yeah,
know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what kind of equipment you have, what's in your head, what's in your heart, that's what counts. And, mm-hmm. you know, you have to learn to trust your instinct and just go with what you feel. So many times I think people just, they try to ignore what they're feeling, and they want proof. So many investigators want proof on camera, or they want, mm-hmm. you know, they want voices to be recorded, when really, it doesn't have to be that way. Just listen and let mm-hmm. yourself be that vessel. And
oh,
so,
my God, Cindy, you get it. Thank you.
Yeah, you do.
You're
and
so good.
I like that. I like that, because that's, you know, I think people get drawn in a lot of times by the television shows, and I understand that. And so I think they think that they need to do what they see on television. And
right.
We just had a kids ghost camp this last weekend where we worked with kids who are interested in becoming paranormal investigators. And we told them, you know, we sat them down and we showed them every piece of equipment. And then I asked them, I said, now tell me what the most important piece of equipment in this room is. And, you know, oh, it's the laser grid. Oh, it's the EMF meter. Oh, it's the recorder. And I looked at them and I said, you are. And they all went, oh.
That is so true, though. And, you know, when you learn to use your own mind, you can go so much farther. You know, technology has nothing to do with what's real. You don't have to prove it. Just know what's in your heart and go with that.
I believe technology keeps you from connecting on some levels. I think that... just like we sit in front of the TV rather than connecting with our families, I think that if you're staring at a meter or looking into a camera, I think that you're missing the essence of what goes on in a haunted location.
Exactly. You know,
and not to mention, I mean, who can really afford that stuff anymore?
Oh, my gosh.
I know, right?
You know? I mean, it's...
Exactly.
It's so funny because it's how we talk about the human mind and the body. We are designed... If there is an intelligent designer, we are designed to be our own little spectrometer. You know, after thousands of years of or millions of years of evolving, we at one time had to be well aware of what was going on around in our surroundings. And it's like, yeah, we have gotten away from that big time because we see this stuff on television. Yeah, it's sexy and it looks cool and everything, but it is so incredibly unnecessary. My kid plays with my EMF detector. I use a compass when I'm on an investigation because a compass is so much more reliable than something with batteries.
But people want the Holy Grail. I don't know how many people have said to me, I'm looking for the Holy Grail so that I can prove it. And that's fine.
Who are you, Monty Python? There are thousands of pictures out there of full-bodied apparitions and thousands of them. So it's like, there's only one Holy Grail, people, you know?
That's right. So,
that's so
is this your first book? Oh, go
just
ahead.
Just like you said, you know, our ancestors had to rely on their senses.
Sure.
And, you know, they didn't have high-powered rifles with scopes when they were hunting. They had to rely on their instincts and the senses that God gave them. And so many times we ignore what we already have.
That's right, and that is why I can still take down a saber-toothed tiger with my bare hands.
That's me.
Karen, do they exist up there in the Pacific
Northwest? You should see the wild boar heads on my wall.
No, but wouldn't that be awesome if I could?
But, you know, what was I going to say?
I'm sorry.
I just keep laughing. It's hilarious.
This is what happens from having three children and a dog and a cat. And
yeah, I hear you.
But there's one aspect of the book that I did want to bring out is that there's the evil spirit, but there's also a good spirit in the house.
Okay.
And the good spirit is actually a child. And I guess for me, every good ghost story has to have a little ghost girl. That makes it even creepier.
Oh, ghost kids are kind of creepy.
Yeah, I don't like
this little girl happens to have drowned, and so every time she's seen in the house, she's dripping wet, she's cold, she's blue, you know, and so her goal is to warn people, you know, don't say her name. So the little girl on the cover has her fingers over her lips because that's the way she communicates with other people. You know, she's telling them to shh.
Yeah.
Got it. So this is is this your first book?
This is my first book.
And so are there more in the hopper?
I've actually started two other novels. I have a very close friend that has a haunting in her house that she does not want her children to find out about. She knows that they'll never sleep again if they find out. So she's given me a lot of good tips to go on. And so I've started writing that one, and I also have another one in the process that is based on the life of a serial killer. So it has nothing to do with a ghost, but we'll see how that one goes.
So do you have sort of a fascination with the serial killers, true crime, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm weird that way.
No, I'm the same way, so
no,
I get it.
That's great.
Totally. Yeah. I read that stuff. I read almost anything, but serial killers have always fascinated me.
Same here. And just to be able to, you know, try to go inside the mind of one, that's a challenge. So I don't know how well it'll come out, so we'll just have to keep waiting and see how things pan out. But I hope to have that written by Christmas.
So, oh, very good.
This book I wrote during Christmas vacation. I homeschool our children, and so that was the only time that I could sit down and write without a lot of interruptions. So we ate a lot of frozen pizzas, and our house was so nasty for about 2 weeks, but I wrote a book.
Wow, so you wrote it in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks.
Wow, it was ready to come out.
Yeah, the idea had been rolling around in my mind for so long, and, you know, when it just finally hit me how I wanted to do it, it just flowed. It was ready.
Oh, that's great, though. And you sort of lose, when you're in that zone and writing that way, you sort of lose track of kind of everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the kids thought that I had just completely gone bonkers because I was, you know, they was, Mama, can you hear me? And I would just put my hand up, no, I can't hear you.
As long as you showered and brushed your teeth, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Find something to eat. We have cereal. We have fresh meal. You'll be fine.
When I wrote my book, I wrote mine in 3 days, and I, like, 18-hour days, just...
I'd
get up, I'd shower, I'd brush my teeth, and that'd be it. I'd sit there. I wouldn't even eat.
It's a great book. I mean, my wife liked it, too.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I understand. So I'm excited that you're writing a couple of other books, too. It sounds like maybe you've found something that really speaks to you, and...
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that when you find that thing that becomes your thing, I think that's a really satisfying thing to have happen.
It truly is. And when you find something that you enjoy doing, it just, I don't know, it just clicks. And you just know, you know, you get in that zone, and that's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I get it. Well, Rick and I are both writers, so we understand the love of writing, and I think it's great that you're doing it. And, you know, there's a big risk going and writing a novel, because you put yourself on the page, and then you put it out there, and then you have to hear what people think about it.
I really don't, you know, write fiction. I'm actually not very good at it. But, I mean, you know, it just seems that with a lot of fiction writers that you put so much of yourself into the character or the characters that, you know, even a psychologist could sit back and be like, wow, this person really is putting themselves out there.
Yeah, it's like you just kind of become the character while you're writing.
Yeah.
So do you, when you finished your book... Did you kind of feel a little sense of loss? Like, oh, I've been two full weeks with these people, and now?
Yeah, and I've actually had several people to tell me they want me to go back and write maybe a series about each individual family, because I don't focus that much on the individual people who live there as much as I do the ghosts who reside there. So I don't know. That's something that I've thought about, but I don't know if I could... I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that or not. But at the end of the book, I was kind of sad to see, you know, some of the ghosts go into the light, others don't, and it's kind of sad to see that happen and to know that it's finally over.
Yeah.
You want it to kind of keep going on and on.
Well,
you just gave us a spoiler alert there, you know.
No, she didn't say. She said some do and others don't.
That's exactly right.
She didn't say
who I'm talking about.
She could, not only that, it could be like an Easter egg. It could be totally not true.
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
Red herring.
Yep.
See, so we don't know. So the book is on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And is it Kindle?
Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
It's also available on Books A Million.
Okay, and is there a Kindle version or an electronic version?
No, not yet.
Okay.
That may be something in the future, but not now.
All right.
I've got to make some money on the book before I can do anything else for the book. Publishing is not cheap.
No, publishing is not cheap, and I love the self-publishing models, especially like the, it looks like you use the CreateSpace platform, which is, I think, fantastic for people.
They have been great.
Yeah.
They were so helpful, because I really didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I was completely in the dark, and, you know, I really appreciated the way they would, you know, I could call, and I would get a live person at any time during the day. You know, it wasn't automated. It was easy to use. You know, the whole format was easy to understand. It really was a blessing to be able to find them.
One of your kids' names is Gooey.
That's right.
But that's her actual Christian baptism.
No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's awesome.
Her name is Grace. My sister's little boy cannot say Grace. For some reason, when she was born, you know, everybody was calling her Baby Gracie. He could not say that, and it would come out Baby Gooey every time.
I love it. That's awesome.
That's great.
She is now 8 years old, and she is still Gooey, and she tells people very quickly, don't call me Grace, I'm Gooey.
Oh, when she's 16.
Call her that.
When she's 16, she'll probably prefer Grace.
We can hope.
I think that's adorable. I love it. That's really, really cute.
She played T-ball, and she was so upset because I didn't think to tell the coach, you know, that everybody called her Gooey, even the coach. But when they gave her her T-shirt, it had Grace printed on the back, and she was so upset. She said, I'm not Grace.
My name is Gooey.
Yep, that's her.
Oh, that's adorable.
All three of my children are characters in the book, but Grace is not mentioned very often because I let her be the model on the cover. So there is a Luke and there is a Hannah in the book. Mm-hmm. And the last several chapters reflect our personal lives. So the children, the three children that the couple have are actually based on the lives of my children, if that makes sense.
Sure. I bet that your kids love being in a book.
They were very excited, and I put Luke in as a deputy, and he really liked that.
Oh, that's so fun. Kids are so much fun.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I know.
So it's Gooey sometimes. On the cover with her finger over her lips.
Yep, that's Gooey.
Oh, very cute.
There's a very interesting thing about the house on the cover.
Yes.
My niece, Lauren, actually designed the cover for me, and she went to the house to make pictures. The owner had told her, you know, just come whenever you want to. We knew that she would be at work, but Lauren went with her camera by herself, walked all around the house making pictures from different angles. She came by here with her laptop on her way home, and on one of the pictures, you can very, very clearly see a woman in the window. So I called the owner, and I asked her, you know, who was that? Because we didn't know anyone was home. She said, there's nobody there. But when they bought the house, her husband had an oil painting painted of the house as an anniversary gift.
Okay.
And the artist called and asked, do you want the woman painted in the window as she looks on the picture you submitted? That same woman. And so when they had the oil painting painted, there's that woman in that window, the exact same window, exact same woman. Very, very odd coincidence, but she's very present on there.
That's a very cool story. So do you have a personal website or anything where people can find you?
Well, on Facebook, I'm listed under author Cindy Pons Newell.
Okay.
And I actually have a website from CreateSpace. So someone could go on there and order the book, and you can also see a description of the book and the book cover as well. And that, that's CreateSpace. Well, hold on, I'm sorry. www.createspace.com /378-9112.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So you can look her up on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. You can find her on Facebook. You can find her on CreateSpace. And thank you for coming on this show and telling
us
your story. And when you have another book come out, let us know.
I definitely will. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. So that's Cindy Pons Newell, everybody. We can say her name, so that's good. And we can apparently say Gooey's name, too. So
That's right.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be – go ahead, say it, Rick.
Meanwhile.
We're going to be talking to Dave Galvin with Paranormal League of America. Stick around. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
You're listening to Z-Talk, and the opinions Network. Given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Z-Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that's going to apply to some of the subject matter that we're talking about tonight. Hey, everybody! Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. First hour, we were talking to City Pons Newell. She is the author of Don't Say Her Name, and it sounds like an excellent book, and I may be looking that up. But now joining us, meanwhile, is Dave Galvin of the Paranormal League of America, as well as the founder, owner, operator, producer, and all that kind of good stuff, Lord High Muckety Muck of UTX Vision. And if what I see is correct on his Facebook page, he is a fellow comic book nerd. So, Dave, welcome back to the Underground.
Oh, my goodness, what a pleasure it is to be here. You know, this is my favorite paranormal radio show to actually listen to.
As it should be, Dave. So, you know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's very rare. A couple years ago, I was on a show, and I was plugging my book, and I was sort of making the junket out there on all the radio shows. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it's very, very rare to find these shows that are hosted by people who actually know what they're talking about.
I know, right?
Well, we're just really good at faking it.
Well, awesome.
Speaking of faking it, I'm just going to out you right now. Dave just recently investigated a porn shop, and I don't know anybody else who's ever come up with doing that. So, good job.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It was an absolute, can I say it was an absolute pleasure to investigate the porn shop? I think I'm
Yeah, we're not even going to tell you what it is that Karen said, so. Dirty, dirty girl.
You didn't even know I knew those existed, did you?
I, you know what? I had a feeling all along. But, you know, let's, taboo
so
video, correct?
He's so excited at the thought of a haunted porn shop.
Hey, I'm a guy.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, it's sort of a long story as to how I came up with the idea for UTX Vision about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And since then we've been, you know, slowly filming our stuff, just to do this show. And we actually investigated this place. It was actually just about a year ago, I would say. And I decided to have this sort of be the first one on UTX Vision. The show's called A Paranormal Truth. And, I decided to have this be the first one just because I enjoyed this investigation a lot. We actually investigated.
I'm sorry.
Of course you did.
I bet you did.
It's not for the obvious reasons, actually. This particular shop, it's the Taboo Adult Video on Broadway here in Portland, Oregon. And we also, at the same time, investigated next door, which was a place called the Tiger Bar, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a pub. Okay. Because they've been known to have some activity at the same time, so we were able to actually get in and investigate both of them. And what made it really, you know, such a pleasure for us was
I've got to stop.
What's that?
I've got to stop every time you say pleasure. It's cracking me up. I'm sorry. I'm 12.
No, It was a pleasure. It was an honor for us to be in there because we were literally the first group to go into either of these locations. And as you know, all these groups out there are constantly pushing and shoving each other out of the way to be the first to go into a location.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of growing up that needs to be done in this field. But it was very nice for them to have invited us in to say, hey, can you guys come in and actually, you know, investigate both these locations at the same time? And at the same time, what makes these places very interesting is, first of all, in the porn shop, there had been some confirmed deaths in there roughly 20 years ago or so. We were able to document that. And
what
at the
exactly
same token,
death by porn, or was it something else?
Well, actually, it was kind of death by porn. Previously, in this building, in this Taboo, it actually had been, over the decades, a couple of other porn shops. There was one a number of years ago called Fantasy. They were only there for a couple of years. They weren't able to actually make a go of it, and they actually shut it down after a very brief time. Okay. And then before that, for roughly 15 years, It was actually a little mom and pop kind of porn shop, and at that time there were some deaths in there. There was actually an old guy who went back into the arcade, mm-hmm. and while watching a video actually suffered a heart attack and died. Which is, you know, kind of tragic.
At least he went out happy.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, you know, I'd hate to be at that funeral. So how did Grandpa die?
He went out doing what he loved.
a little bit of self-pleasure.
There was a confirmed story of a junkie who went back into the arcade and OD'd and died. Was there. But also, and more importantly, both of these locations actually sit on... what used to be called the old Portland-Shanghai tunnels. Decades upon decades ago, this part of Portland was very infamous in its history. In fact, it's one of those things that is so infamous that the Oregon Historical Society kind of doesn't even acknowledge it exists.
Why don't you talk a little bit about the Shanghai tunnels, because it's a pretty fascinating story, and actually it's where the term Shanghai came from, right?
As I understand, yeah, it was, because they would literally, we're talking of, you know, starting around the turn of the last century when our grandparents were young. What ends up happening is they carved all these underground tunnels throughout Portland to specifically just to bring in, this before cars. So what happens is when it rains in Oregon, which it does quite frequently, the roads get very muddy, and it's very difficult to have brought a horse-drawn carriage in with goods for the hotels and the restaurants and the bars and all that. The carts would always get stuck in the mud. So what they did is they carved these tunnels throughout Portland, and when they would bring the cargo in, they'd bring the goods and stuff through the tunnels into the shops. It was actually a very good idea at the time. The problem is at night, it became just a horrible, seedy place. It was a haven for prostitution. It was a haven for opium dens. And most importantly, most infamously, it was a haven for Shanghaiing. What would happen is there would be bars, locations, and whatnot that would be sort of in on it. And they'd get these able-bodied lumberjacks. Some of them were sailors, you know, just big guys, and women, too, for that matter. And they would drug them when they would go into bars. They'd just put something in their drink. They'd drug them. And then they would get kidnapped as they would basically pass out. And sometimes they'd wake up on ships on their way to Shanghai, China, and they would basically be sold into slavery. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'd wake up in these little makeshift jails down below in the tunnels. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes they'd die down there. Sometimes they'd try to escape and they'd be killed on the way and so forth. It was a very infamous time, a very infamous history here in Portland. In fact, the Oregon Historical Society, for some stupid reason, doesn't even acknowledge that Shanghaiing even happened. Because they just don't want to think about it. Even though, if you go back into the local newspapers, the Oregonian, if you go back far enough, you can actually find articles written about how, for example, the British military said they would stop coming to use Portland as a port if the city of Portland didn't do something about all the Shanghaiing, because they kept losing all their sailors.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you not acknowledge that it happened when it's right there? So it's a very dark part of Portland history. And these tunnels actually still exist throughout Portland. It's just, it's all on city property, and they don't let people go in there just for obvious liability reasons. But they're just still carved throughout the city. And every once in a while, there's like a... You'll hear in Portland about like a major sinkhole that happened, and that what that is it's a tunnel that finally just collapsed.
You know what I think is weird, Dave, is that you talk about how the city of Portland, they don't like talk about the Shanghais, and it makes me laugh, because here in Chicago, for example, we love our seedy past. We love our gangsters. We love our prohibition drive-by killings.
Yeah, but that's not how we are in the Pacific Northwest. We're nice and we're environmentally friendly, and you know, and so
tree-hugging hippies.
That seedy crap. No, that doesn't fit with our image.
Oh no, Chicago's hardcore, man. No, but seriously though, it's weird when you hear that kind of thing, because you do hear that every town, every city has a deep, dark secret, and with a place like Portland, with what was going on with the Shanghai, it really is no surprise that there's a lot of ghosts in that town. You know, for what kind of stuff do people experience at the prawn shop and the Tiger Bar?
Well, the porn store, the Taboo Video on Broadway, we had reports of sometimes there had been products flying off walls, which some could actually be explained. They're what they would do is they would lay some product up on the sort of the top of these shelves. The ledge isn't very wide, so if a big truck was to go by, it's possible something could have fallen down. Sure. But some of the stuff was very difficult to dismiss. There was one employee named Doyle, who is actually a friend of mine, and he apparently was very sensitive, and we brought him on both investigations with us, and I didn't realize how sensitive he was, and I don't think he did either. Mm-hmm. But he would tell us stories about there's a security camera that they have posted in the arcade in the hallway, so obviously you can see, you know, what's going on. The employees want to know what's going on.
Yeah, I would
sure
want to watch that camera.
Yeah, no.
No, stop. It's only in the hallway. But he actually saw a full-figured apparition on the security camera at one point, which was kind of interesting. And another
was it jamming out with his clam out?
No,
oh my
he was
God,
actually,
Karen.
Yeah, I know. He was actually, there's actually a big support beam that actually holds the ceiling up. He was actually behind that, and he said he saw him just sort of standing there behind it. He was like, wait a minute, there's somebody standing back there. I didn't think there was anybody in the store. And he goes back there, and of course, sure enough, there's nobody there. And there's obviously no exit back there, so it's like, well, that's kind of strange. But the most interesting story I heard was that somebody was actually in an arcade booth, and mm-hmm. They sort of took their jacket off, and they put it on a chair. And, of course, it fell down at some point, as gravity tends to do that sometimes. And mm-hmm. he goes to pick it up, and the jacket actually slid by itself underneath the door out into the hallway. And the guy the guy opened the door and ran out the door with his jacket still in the hallway because he got so freaked out. And he came back like 10 minutes later, got his jacket, explained to the person behind the counter what was happening, and to my knowledge, has never come back. So we just, you know, just certain things like that just could never be explained. And also in the Tiger Bar, we'd hear stories next door of, specifically in the basement where the Shanghai tunnels actually had connected at some point. Mm-hmm. You'd hear stories of shadow people. You'd hear stories of hearing, kind of that, what I call the cocktail party effect, where you hear like a group of people talking, but you can't really make it out. That sort of background voices mm-hmm. kind of thing. We'd also hear stories in the kitchen how sometimes pots and pans would kind of go flying on their own and stuff like that. So that's kind of why they asked us to come in, and they were more than happy to let us film, which we were very, very happy about.
And it is on UTX Vision right now, you say?
Yeah, actually, part one of the investigation is currently posted at utxvision.com. It's actually very... very easy to find. You go to utxvision.com, and then over to the right, over to the left, there's a link that says Paranormal. Just mm-hmm. click on there, and it'll take you straight to A Paranormal Truth, and you can see the first half of the investigation we did.
All right.
You know, what I'm curious about, Dave, you know, considering the fact that you have the tunnels that, you know, run underneath the entire city of Portland, do you think that what they're experiencing in Taboo is the same exact entities or ghosts, spirits, apparitions, what have you, that they're experiencing in the Tiger Bar as well? Kind of like a bleed over.
I think it's exactly what's happening. I don't think that there's really any difference. I think it's possible that the intelligent spirits, and I'm sure there are a number of them, I'm sure they're kind of going between the two, and for that matter, all across the entire block, for all we know. Actually, when we investigated, and you'll see this in part two, which we'll post in a couple of weeks, when we investigated the Tiger Bar basement, like I mentioned previously, Doyle was very sensitive, and he had this vision in his head And, I mean, it was so overwhelming to him, we had to escort him out of the building and take him outside to get some fresh air. And he didn't know anything about the Shanghai tunnels, really, other than what they were. But he actually had this vision in his head of these, of this man getting beaten. There was, like, literally a row of men sitting on the ground, and one was getting beaten for some reason. And somehow there was a little girl who watched her father, or it was either father or uncle, it was probably a family member. He couldn't tell which one, but she watched him basically get beaten to death. And as I was asking him what he saw, I very carefully asked him, did you notice whether they were wearing shoes or not? And he said, no, definitely they weren't wearing shoes, which I thought was really interesting, because one of the legends of the Shanghai tunnels was they would take your shoes and socks from you after they'd kidnap you, and they'd put glass all over the ground. And that is, if you woke up early and tried to escape, it basically slowed you down. It made it very difficult for you to escape. So he actually had no idea that they did anything like that whatsoever. All he knew was what the Shanghai tunnels actually did. So that was very fascinating that he actually saw that.
Yeah. Portland has some really neat haunted places, and actually just kind of the northwestern Oregon has some really neat haunted places. And I know you get to investigate a lot of them down there.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. Portland doesn't get its credit for being as haunted as it is. I mean, certainly, are there more haunted cities? Yeah, probably. But Portland always kind of just gets seen as the place where a bunch of hipsters hang out and drink coffee and play around on their
cell phones
all day.
That's exactly what I think when I think of the Pacific Northwest. Wait a minute. That and flannel shirts.
I don't currently own anything flannel, just so you know.
But you do love Eddie Vedder.
I do love Eddie Vedder.
Okay.
That is true. So we'll talk about UTX Vision in a minute too, but tell me about some of your favorite haunted places down in those parts.
Well, my favorite haunted places actually are, I think, are more private residences than they are public.
Oh, okay.
You know how everybody, when they find out you hunt ghosts, they always ask you, you know, what's the most haunted place in the area? Well, a lot of them are private residences, and you obviously can't exactly give an address to somebody.
Right.
There could be some problems, but there have been a number of private residences that we've actually investigated in the Portland area that have been everything from just simply residual to a borderline demonic, where I've actually had to walk through the house and actually do a read the Catholic rites of exorcism just to try to get rid of the whatever was there. And also the Oregon coast is also quite haunted as well. The city of Astoria, Oregon, is actually the oldest incorporated city in Oregon, and it is insanely haunted just because of all the nastiness that happened there, all the shipwrecks. Sure. I mean, to this day, the tides are so strong over there that when a ship comes to port, they have to bring in a special captain to pilot the ship from about a mile out into the actual port. Who are these particular pilots are familiar with the currents and whatnot. So, whereas a pilot coming in from, say, California, not familiar with it, will crash the ship. There's no two ways about it. So there's a lot of shipwrecks. And
yes,
there were also a lot of fights between the Finnish workers who would work there and the Chinese workers who would work there, because they didn't like each other very much back in those days. So the Astoria is extremely haunted. You know, even all the way down the coastline, all the way down to, say, Newport. We've gone down to Newport before, and Newport's a very funny place because there's a lot of rumors down there of decades ago of satanic cults. I think you all may remember a couple of decades ago there was that famous, I forget the name of them, but they became known as the Halebop cults because they all committed suicide when
Halebop. Oh,
that's
right.
They actually
I thought you were going to say the Goonies.
They actually formed themselves down in Newport, Oregon, before they moved down to San Diego and got famous by all eating that poison pudding. So that whole area is all kind of got some bad mojo going on. We've had to clean up some messes down there a few times.
Well, and I would also add Oregon City is pretty darn haunted, too. So,
you know, Oregon City, I didn't want to say Oregon City, but Oregon City, definitely. We actually had a private residence out there maybe a year and a half ago. That was the one I had to read the Catholic rites of exorcism at to get rid of whatever was there.
Wow, now, wow.
Dave, let me ask you something.
That's a long story. We helped those clients at two different houses, actually.
Oh, wow.
Now, did you have to, like, burn sage and sweetgrass and all that as well?
No, we don't really do that.
Okay.
It's just, I mean, there's different ways to cleanse, and there are different belief systems, and so, yeah, definitely. So if I were, you know, just coming as a tourist to Portland, and I wanted to go visit a few haunts in Portland, public places that I could go, where would you send me?
Well, the first place I would send you to is there is an actual Portland Shanghai Tunnel tour. That you can take. If you're visiting Portland, just get online and just do a Google search for Portland Shanghai Tunnel Tours. There's the official one that's run by the Cascade Geographic Society, run by a man named Michael P. Jones. And he's actually, I have to credit him very heavily because he's the one who's sort of kept this history alive so that everyone knows, you know, what really happened and what actually was going on, instead of having certain people kind of rewrite history. But he actually runs a tour out of the basement of what's called a Hobo's, which is a pub here in Portland. And that particular location was actually a big hub for the Shanghai Tunnel Tour. They found so much artifacts down there, including like a big mess of shoes. Like I said before, they took people's shoes. They found like a big mess of shoes and a bunch of bottles and places. A little section that used to be where that was all literally holding cells, where they would, when they kidnapped you, they'd lock you in the holding cell and so on.
Wow.
So he's the guy who keeps it up, and he's definitely the big tour that you're going to want to take. But Portland does have a lot of haunted locations. I mean, publicly, I mean, of course, you've got Taboo Video in the Tiger Bar.
That's right.
You got to be 21 to go into the Tiger Bar because it is a pub, and of course, you got to be 18 to go into Taboo Video. And then there's the merry-go-round at Jansen Beach Center is said to be very haunted.
Really?
It's been known. Yeah, it's been. There's been a lot of like security guards have reported hearing like children laughing around there at like 3 o'clock in the morning. They're like, what's going on? There's nothing there. You know, gosh only knows if that's residual or if it's intelligent or anything. So those are very, very, high end places. One of the most high places in the area, excuse me, they actually just tore down about a year ago. It was an old empty movie theater that was actually just about a quarter mile from me. It was the old Washington Square Cinema. In fact, my old friend Martina Baker used to investigate that place quite regularly. There was a couple of ghosts in there. There was a ghost cat. There was a little girl that was in there who would just like be seen skipping around the hallways. And then there was a mean old man that they would call Lurch, just because he looked like Lurch whenever he was seen. But he was very mean, very evil, and he was known to pick on women a lot. There's a story that when it was a working theater, one of the female employees went up into the attic, and it had one of those drop down from the ceiling with the ladder kind of coming down kind of things going up into the attic. And she went up there to get some like holiday decorations. And as she had her hands full of holiday decorations up in the attic, she was about ready to get situated so she can go down the ladder. And Lurch evidently didn't like her and pushed her down the stairs. She ended up breaking her leg.
Oh, my gosh.
And as she was laying on the ground, she looks up and she sees him looking down at her with a bit of a smirk on his face. And that building sat empty for quite a number of years. They just tore it down about a year back. I was very sad because I always wanted to go in there and investigate it.
So I wonder what happens to Lurch. He just hangs out on the property, I suppose, once the building goes, huh?
You know, that's a very good question. I mean, there's a bunch of restaurants, actually, in that parking lot. There's a TGI Fridays. There's another restaurant that I can't think of off the top of my head because it's one of those overpriced places where the food's not so good.
Hey, Dave.
So I don't go there very often.
Dave,
yeah.
No self-respecting ghost would ever haunt a TGI Fridays.
I was thinking that, but I wasn't going to
Maybe
say
Chili's.
It. Chili's, that's right. He's going for baby back ribs.
Okay, fair enough. But, you know, there's plenty of places for them to, you know, hang out at if they wanted to. Or maybe they're hanging out in the parking lot. Yeah, that's a very good question. I wanted to know what's happened to them ever since myself.
Maybe you should go hang out in the parking lot at like 3 o'clock in the morning with a recorder and find out.
Maybe I should. And
there's a weird bald guy out there.
Maybe the police will probably come and wonder what the hell I'm doing.
Oh, you know, only if your wife calls the cops on you while you're there.
Yeah.
Some creepy guy.
Yep.
So let's talk about UTX Vision. This has been something that you've been working on because, you've been talking to me about it for a long time now.
Yeah.
How long have you been working on this?
Well, I came up with the idea. This is a very long story, and I'm going to try to abbreviate this as much as possible. I came up with this idea in June, July of 2010. And the reason I came up with the idea is, like a lot of ghost hunters, or I prefer to refer to myself as a paranormal researcher, but you say that to the layman, they have no idea what you're talking about. But a lot of people in this field, I ended up getting a lot of phone calls for the longest time from producers who wanted to do a TV show. And, you know, I wasn't close to the idea of doing a series. Doing a series was fine. I just wanted to do a show that I wanted to do. I didn't want to sell out and do just some schlocky show where all the evidence is fake and so forth. So I would sit here and I would talk to these producers and I said, I'll tell you what, I'm all for doing a show, but I'm not going to fake any evidence. And at that point, the producers pretty much just said, okay, thanks, but no thanks. And, you know, it kind of makes you think, doesn't it? At one point, actually, I was speaking with a producer, and I was actually on the phone in a conference call with one of the head mucky mucks over at A&E Programming. Mm. And we sat there, and we talked to them about what we had in mind, and I told them, I said, the key thing to realize is that what the show's going to be about is it's going to talk a bit about the history of the location, because without the history, you know, what do you have? You just have a building. So you got to talk about the history of the location. And I'm a history buff, so that I like to use the paranormal as an excuse to teach people some history. Mm-hmm. the key thing is I want to show what the PLA, what the Paranormal League of America, what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And I don't want to show a bunch of, you know, I don't want to fake anything. I'm not going to fake evidence. I'm not going to, stand there and go, what was that? Oh, did you hear that?
Right.
What the hell was that?
Yeah, I get it.
But you know what?
I've had the same conversation with TV producers, so I totally understand what you're saying.
Oh, sure, sure. And so anyway, when I was in this phone conversation with this mucky muck at A&E, he basically, I told him this, and there was a pause, and he basically ended the conversation by saying, well, I'm sorry to say that you guys just aren't interesting enough for television. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Have you seen our YouTube channel? I mean, we've got some really cool stuff up there. We got some great EVPs, you know? I mean, this is interesting stuff. The problem is all these cable channels, they want people to be scared watching this stuff. And they'll go to any means necessary just to put a chill on your spine. And the so-called reality is not real. In fact, I won't tell that story because I don't feel like getting you guys sued. But a lot of these shows are let's just say a lot of these shows are scripted. They actually have in the script that there's going to be an event in a certain location every X amount of minutes, so that people at home are, you know, kind of going, ooh, that's kind of eerie, you know.
Well, plus it gives you something to cut to commercial on.
Yeah,
it gives you that little cliffhanger so people don't leave when you go to commercial.
But now, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, because, okay, I've been kind of believing for the last couple of years now, maybe these producers are actually going out of their way to try and discredit the field. That's something to consider.
That's an interesting theory. I mean, most of the people I talk to, as far as producer-wise, they don't seem to be that interested in the field to either give it credit or discredit it.
No, they just want money. Like
they just have a show to do.
Yep.
And they just want to do it. They have a job. Now, here's the thing. Many, many, many years ago, I mean, we're talking like two decades ago, when I had hair down to my shoulders and I was a bright young man looking to take over the world, I actually worked in the...
Dave, I've known you for a while now. I can't picture you with hair.
I was a good-looking young guy with a very high hairline and something that sort of resembled a mullet because we were coming out of the 80s.
Oh, my God. I want you to send me pictures of that, please. Thank you.
No, it'll never happen.
We're putting it on the homepage.
It's fine. I know your wife. She'll do it. She'll send them to me.
So anyway, as I was saying, many, many years ago when I was a young man, I actually worked in the comic book business for a couple years. And I used to write the Hollywood column for a magazine called Wizard, the Guide to Comics. And I wrote it for the better part of 2 years. And so what I did was I would call up producers, publicity people, and so forth. I'd find out what show that they're working on that's of the comic book genre, science fiction, fantasy, and whatever. And I'd write the column about this particular show is currently, the rights are currently at this production company, and they're currently trying to spin it off into a show, blah, blah, blah. So that's basically what I did. Now, I learned something very interesting when I worked at this place, when I worked at this job. I learned that Hollywood producers, what they will do is they will actually, let's say a show gets sort of picked up to be made, to have a pilot made, and let's say that the channel that's paying for it is going to give this production company, let's say $250,000 to make this, to develop the show and possibly make maybe a 10-15 minute pilot out of it. Okay. Which isn't a heck of a whole lot of money, but what the production company will do is they will actually take that money, they'll cut it in half, so they'll take that $250,000, they'll only use $125,000 to develop the show and actually make the show. So then they'll actually take that other $125,000, and then they'll use that to try to develop something else for another network. And this happens all the time.
Wow.
So what happens is you get all these producers who are constantly calling people to all these paranormal researching groups who are being told that there's going to be a show that's going to be made when realistically they have no intention of actually making the show.
Right.
They're actually just trying to pitch it to a network who's interested in a paranormal show, who might be interested in a paranormal show.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of those producers. Hey, I have a show I'd like to pitch to you for UTX Vision. Bear with me now.
Yeah.
Think about this.
Yeah,
the Real Housewives of the Paranormal. Come on.
Oh, wow.
See?
Wow.
Oh, wow, that's good.
I
think
know.
Jamie would totally get behind that, only because she could say what a nerd I am.
See, I want to do something very obscure that nobody will watch, like The Real Housewives of Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, well, see, I am from Bellingham, Washington, you know. Did you know that when you chose Bellingham?
No, I had no idea.
I grew up in Bellingham, Washington.
Okay, so how about this? The Real Housewives of Tacoma.
Oh, how about The Real Housewives of Chehalis, because it's much smaller.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So now, UTX doesn't just have paranormal programming. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. We are actually going to be doing all sorts of different types of reality shows. We're going to do cooking shows. In fact, we just uploaded footage that we filmed a couple weeks ago. Last night we just uploaded it. It's footage from, it's an overview of the Rose City Comic Con that actually happened earlier this month. And so you'll be able to actually see that as we speak. In fact, this weekend, my wife and I are going to what's called the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. It's a big gaming expo, and all it is the really old games we grew up playing with, but the Ataris or ColecoVisions and so forth. So it's just it's this huge event that happens here for 2 days at the Oregon Convention Center, and we're going to be filming over there, and then we'll have that posted in a couple weeks. So it's not just paranormal shows, although certainly a Paranormal Truth is one of our flagship programs, but it's going to be all sorts of different things.
Very good. So you're just one man, and you have a day job.
And
you have two girls.
And a
wife. So,
yep.
How are you doing this all, Dave? Are you bending the space-time continuum, or
not
sleeping?
You want to talk about not sleeping is very key, because I work actually a pretty much a graveyard shift. I get off
I get up my job around 4 a.m. I get home, I get to sleep about 5, and then I wake up 2 hours later to see my oldest daughter head off to school, and then I sleep a little bit more, and then I get my younger daughter ready for preschool, drive her to preschool, come home, work a little bit on editing and such, and then pick her up and then try to get another 3 hours of sleep after my wife gets home before I have to head to work. So sleep is something you tend to sacrifice a lot, unfortunately, but it's just one of those things that you just sort of do.
Yeah.
Just try not to think about it.
Well, you know, it's,
thinking about it actually makes it worse. It actually makes you more tired. If you just stop thinking and just do it, it's not as bad as it sounds.
So I know I kind of sarcastically just pitched an idea, but if people have ideas that they think would be good for UTX Vision, are you talking to people about those things, or you know, are you open for shows if people have good ideas, or what's sort of your plan?
We're open for any type of programming, both paranormal. So if there's any ghost groups out there, Bigfoot groups, UFO groups, whichever, who are thinking that, hey, I got a great idea for a show, you could go to UTX Vision, and there's a little section there that says contact. Click that contact button, and you can shoot me an email from there. So we're looking for all different types of shows, but certainly I want to give the paranormal field something to, you know, watch that's real. I'm tired of all these hokey shows that are constantly on, and I want to give people a chance to be in a show that they're proud of, and not just what was that?
Right, I know. Oh, look, it's an orb.
You know what though? Yeah. I would really like to see a show that does chronicle what the investigator researcher really does, and that's sitting in a room for 4 hours just waiting for a ball to move across the floor. You know, that's real, you know, but that's not entertaining.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's amazing how much stuff actually gets cut out.
Mm-hmm.
We did Getting Back to the Taboo video and the Tiger Bar investigation. You know, I had hours and hours and hours of footage from both of those places over two nights, and I had to basically cut it down to about 44 minutes. So there's a bunch of stuff you end up having to cut out that's just boring to watch.
People sitting and looking at monitors.
Yeah.
I got it. Taking baseline readings.
Checking out the porn magazines on the shelves. Dave.
What does this do?
I'm not saying anything. I'm staying quiet.
Well, that's part of investigating too, staying quiet. See, there you go.
Of course it is.
So this is not only for paranormal people to really see something that more closely mirrors what we do, but also it sounds like it could be for somebody who's has a good idea and is willing to make a commitment and do their own filming and editing and everything else, a platform as well that's different from YouTube, correct?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, the first thing we ended up filming, other than episodes of The Paranormal Truth, is we ended up filming it was supposed to be a reality show, but I think it's going to turn out to be more of a documentary about life in these poker halls that have popped up all over Portland, because it turns out the city of Portland actually made poker legal with a lot of laws to it, of course, but a lot of rules you have to follow. But there's all these poker halls that have popped up all across town. And so we went in there for a month. I went into the two different poker halls, and I would film there all the time, you know, like 3 or 4 days a week. And I got tons of footage of that. So I'm actually going to start editing that here very shortly. So, you know, not just paranormal stuff. We're doing all different types of stuff. I've got people who are wanting to do documentaries who are, you know, contacting me saying, hey, I'm interested in doing a documentary. Would you be interested in running it? I said, not a problem as long as it's PG-13. That's all I care about. It's got to be sort of a PG-13 product.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, for people who have not spent a lot of time filming and editing and crafting a show, to do it well, I will tell you this. It's incredibly time consuming.
It is.
I'm never going to do it.
Oh, incredibly time-consuming. You know, when we did our ill-fated Wellington documentary here a few years ago, we had, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of footage that we cut down to an hour and a half. So, yeah, it's time-consuming.
Yeah, and the stuff I've seen from that looks great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know. Well, we
I have a copy of it. It was awesome. I loved it.
We are actually thinking about trying to do it again soon, so...
Oh, good. Well, let me there know, and we can run it on UCX Vision. Hey.
Hey, there you go. Well, if we do, you and I will be talking, I'm sure. So,
sounds good.
Okay. So it's utxvision.com. Is that what it is? Is that right?
That is correct. utxvision.com. We have our official launch in about a week, week and a half. But there's footage right now that you can actually go and see, including... the very first episode of A Paranormal Truth, where the Paranormal League of America goes and interview and investigates a haunted bar
costumes?
And a haunted porn store.
Do you wear costumes like Aquaman and Superman and stuff like that? You know.
Oh my God! Please say you do.
Only when I go to bed at night.
Nice. I don't want to know about that. You should have worn him to the porn store.
Yeah, it would have been fun, but no, you don't want to see me in a superhero suit. It's actually kind of pathetic.
Oh, I'm picturing it now, Dave. What else you want to talk about? We have about 10 minutes left.
Oh, you know, whatever you like. You know how I'm really into the whole paranormal theories, and I do a lot of, I write a lot of theory, a lot of paranormal theory, a lot of scientific research and stuff like that.
So what's your newest theory?
Well, last time we were here, we spoke a little bit about something I call the Einstein-Galvin Bridge.
Yes.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
I sort of amended it a little bit because I read somewhere, and to sort of recap it, it's sort of my opinion that residual hauntings are sort of the, it's sort of a time bleed. It's not mystical energy that's locked in rocks. It's just for whatever reason, a certain place happens to be a hot spot for residual type energy. And I came up with this theory when I actually saw my own ghost one time. I was working at the 7-Eleven a number of years ago, and I went back into the back to grab something, and I came out and I saw myself standing behind the counter.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, that's really strange. How? I'm not dead. Wait a minute, am I dead? Hold on. Nope, heartbeat. Okay, I'm still alive. So I said to myself, you know, I wonder if that's some sort of bleed from the space, you know, sort of a space-time kind of bleed, as they say in Star Trek, of course. So I started thinking to myself, you know, what could actually cause this sort of bleed? And it was my opinion that a very large gravitational force could actually be pulling or pushing time to sort of bleed into each other to a point where we notice it, where we hear it, and so forth. And of course, the average person is going to say, "Oh my God, that's a ghost." They're not going to think anything else of it.
He needs to talk to Thomas Fusco, Rick.
Absolutely, we need to hook those two guys up because we need to hook you up
with Thomas Fusco. You guys are right on the same track.
Yeah, you guys are either going to destroy the world, create a monster, or I don't know what.
Anyway, yeah, go on. But seriously, Cheryl can put you in touch with him. He's the guy you need to talk to about this. Go on. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I sort of amended the theory a little bit because I remember I ended up reading something about, they were talking about string theory. And according to string theory, it is actually physically possible, well, not physically possible, what's happening all around us is on a sub microscopic level, there are these tiny little wormholes that constantly open and close. And the whole thing about a wormhole is that you've got two ends to it. So one's going from one place, the other one's going somewhere else. And I was thinking to myself, well, it's probably possible for the other end of that wormhole to actually be at a different point in time, to actually literally be that bridge between the two times. And that's actually could be opening what could actually be literally the projector, so to speak, of what we are calling a residual haunting.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of the amendment that I sort of have to that. Just sort of certain thoughts that I've been having on that specific theory.
Wow. That's That's pretty fascinating. So you just, when you're in your spare time, which you have so much of, you sit and think of these kinds of things, do you?
Yes, pretty much. Actually, I think about them quite often. A lot of it on the car ride to and from work.
Oh, sure.
Or sometimes, since I do work a graveyard shift, there's times where, you know, things aren't so busy, so I end up thinking about these sort of things quite often. Actually, right now, I'm kind of working on a theory as to why humans are able to see, the average person will say they see something out of the corner of their eye, and that's happened to me many times. I've actually been in a haunted place, seen a figure out of the corner of my eye, turn and look, and there's nothing there.
And I thought that had to do with the cones and rods in your eye. No?
That's very possible. So that's one theory, but if there's actually a ghost, it would make more sense to me, you know, if there's a ghost standing there, well, you know, why wouldn't you be able to see it if you're looking straight at him? So I'm sort of working, I'm kind of working on that right now.
Okay, cool. Well, let us know when you figure that one out.
I'll write a paper and submit it to you all. Don't you know,
That's the other thing is that Dave does do a lot of writing for the magazine, and he also has been really good to us in that most of the time Dave and I are at the same ghost conferences, but when we're not, he takes our stuff and he hands it out so that people are, so he's been a big supporter of Paranormal Underground from the very beginning.
Thanks, Dave.
I have been in love with the Paranormal Underground since I discovered it, just because it's the best written magazine out there. Because it's like the TV shows, it doesn't try to go for the shock value. A lot of the writers always try to give certain benefit of doubts or at least play devil's advocates in their own articles, you know, and so on. And that to me is fair. Because to me, a person who is a total believer saying that this dust orb is definitely a ghost is more of a disservice to the field. Than the non-believer who says there are no such things as ghosts at all. And it's so nice and refreshing when I discovered the underground. I was like, wow, again, people who know what they're talking about.
Well, we try. And if we don't know what we're talking about, we do this little thing called research.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing, here's what I really have always liked about Paranormal Underground from the very start. It does not use spooky fonts.
Right.
Mm.
Seriously, that's a big thing. You see all of these magazines that come out and they use all the spooky fonts and the weird pictures and you know, we actually try to, we try to make it more a little more real. So Cheryl and Chad have done a really good job with it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's plug your book while we got you. We got about 3 minutes, so you can plug your book too. Still out there, right? Well, still for sale?
It's still available. You can go to Amazon.com. If you type in Paranormal League of America into Amazon, it'll come right up. And it's actually it's a very simple book. As I said previously, I'm a history buff. And I really like to use the paranormal as a way to sort of educate people about history. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things about history that people just don't know because it just kind of falls through the cracks. We talked a little bit about that with the Shanghai tunnels. But what it is I take the top 20 places every Halloween. A newspaper or an internet site talks about the top 5, top 10 places that are the most haunted places in America. And, you know, for me, I kind of laugh at that because these are all mostly public places, mostly.
Sure.
And I've been in more haunted private residences than some of these have been to. But I sit down and I write a history of the location, whether it's the White House, whether it's the Winchester Mystery House, whether it's Lent Mansion, or Gettysburg, Queen Mary as well. There's 20 of these locations. I write an actual real brief history about it. Some of them not so brief. Some of them I kind of went off on. But I talk a little bit about, you know, the official history of it. I try to keep it as real as possible because in some cases tourist boards like to skew certain truths, but we keep it as real as we possibly can. And then we talk about the paranormal aspect of that particular property. And then I give it a rating as to if you were to actually investigate that particular location, what would your chances be of you actually capturing something on, you know, one time overnight?
See, I think that's cool.
Yeah, sometimes it's it's pretty high in the case of, say, Gettysburg.
Sure.
In some cases, mm-hmm. it's pretty low in the case of Amityville.
Right.
As in nothing at all, you mean?
Well, and I've read the book. It's been a couple of years since I read it, but it's a good book. It's an enjoyable read. I think you did a great job with it. I really liked reading it. So, you know, I definitely...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it for people who are looking for a good paranormal read. You can get it on Amazon.com. And like Dave says, just type in Paranormal League of America, and it's pretty much the first thing that pops up.
Yeah, it's the first thing that pops up. And the best part about it, I made it very affordable. It's $9.99 plus shipping and handling.
Oh, see, there you go. So do you have any more plans to maybe make another one or write something else? Or you just sort of seeing where life takes you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually started a book about demonology and demons and all that, because that's something that always fascinates everybody in the field and people outside of the field. And what ends up happening is the computer I wrote it on ends up dying, and so I transfer everything from the hard drive that I wanted to save over to my external hard drive when I got my new computer. When I got my new computer, at some point, the file got corrupted. And all the words are backwards now. And all the spaces aren't spaces anymore. They're those strange wingding fonts, you know?
Oh, my God.
That make no sense whatsoever. So I have to go through, and it's there, but I just have to go through it when I find the time, re-edit everything as of before. It's going to take a few weeks, but it'll be one of those things that I just do when I have absolutely nothing to do on my hands, and I don't know when that's going to be. I've just been so darn busy with UTX Vision and Paranormal League of America and all that. It's just taking up a lot of my time these days, plus, you know, the kids and all that.
Yeah, you have to have a life, too. So, Dave, cool. You don't have a website, or do you? Sorry, my dogs are going nuts. I'm sorry. Do you have a website?
Yeah, ParanormalLeagueOfAmerica.org will tell you exactly what the PLA, what we're all about. And, of course, UTXVision.com. You can actually see the PLA in action there, right there on that website. You can actually see what it is that we do and how we do it and why we do it.
Okay.
Very simple stuff.
Okay, Dave Galvin, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Next time you have something to talk about, you know how to get a hold of us.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely love doing this. This is my favorite show, like I said before.
It's really
nice to talk to people who actually know what they're talking about.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And I probably won't see you again until the Oregon Ghost Conference, but I'll be looking forward to that.
Oh, I will too. That was a fun conference.
Yeah. Okay. Dave Galvin, everybody. UTXVision.com. ParanormalLeagueOfAmerica.org. Thanks, Dave. Cheryl.
Thank you, Dave.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good night. Cheryl.
Bye.
Good night.
Hey.
Really fast.
Hey, guys.
Next week.
Next week. Oh, also want to say thanks to Dave. Hi, Dave. to joining us. And also thanks to Cindy, who joined us in the first hour. It was a great conversation you guys had. I really enjoyed it, and I'm hoping our listeners did too. Next week we have Jack Kenna. He will be on October 4th. He's the technical specialist and an assistant case manager for the paranormal team Spirits of New England. Mm-hmm. And also for our live listeners, stay tuned after the end of our show, Paranormal Underground, because you will be listening to Tim and Amy with Fox City's Paranormal Radio, and they will be interviewing Barry Fitzgerald.
Oh, I love Barry. He's so
Barry
fun.
Barry was a lot of fun.
All right. Good. Okay. So that's that. I hope that everybody has a good week. Rick is off next week.
Yes.
So I don't know who's going to be on with me, but I think it'll be
Cheryl. I can tell you. It will be Teresa West.
Teresa.
Oh. Teresa.
So Teresa will be joining on the show next week. And until then, you guys have a really good week. Next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Other times in the flyover states, it's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.